Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a 5-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everybody on this Monday, December 19th, 2022. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how are you doing?
Doing fantastic, Chase. Echo your holiday thoughts. Great to be in the Christmas season here, and great to be celebrating a good win for the team.
We are, and we're in college basketball in general is coming off its biggest weekend of the year with several not only top 25 matchups, but some top 10 matchups. But let's start with USC. Most of these games were heavy loaded for Saturday, but on Sunday we saw some games that included USC at home at Galen against Auburn, at the time ranked number 19. USC trailed at halftime by 4 after building a little bit of a lead in the first half, surrendered it, and then came back in the second half, built another lead, was able to hold on in the end, won 74-71. Biggest win of the year so far for SC. A little perspective on Auburn. I mean, I think they're not the team they were last year, but remember, this Auburn team last year worked their way in to being the number one team in the country for several weeks, according to AP. So now that team also had the number 3 overall draft pick in Jabari Smith. He's no longer on the team. Walker Kessler's no longer on the team. But a lot of the guards basically were back. Katie Johnson, who had an interesting game we could talk about. Wendell Green, who had banged up his ankle in the prior game against Georgia State, really struggling out there. Jalen Williams was back for them. Jeb Zaspert, a decent game. Alan Flanagan had a pretty good game. Kind of the interesting player for Auburn, I guess maybe when we get into some of the game to talk about, is Trey Donaldson, who is not really as heralded of a recruit as some of the other guys Auburn's brought in for this season. But he was something interesting for them. And of course, then they got the Johnny Broom, the transfer from Morehead State. And he's, you know, kind of like seems to be their best player. It was an interesting game for USC. SC, I think, forced 23 turnovers, which is a season high. Obviously, forcing turnovers has been an issue for the program now going on like 5-6 seasons. I think offline, Nick, I looked this up, but this is the first time since like the 2016-2017 season, SC's actually above average in forcing turnovers after forcing all the turnovers yesterday. A large part of that is Kobe Johnson. So the story is the game from the SC standpoint, individual players. Kobe Johnson had another really solid game, really a stabilizing force, 6 steals, 10 points. And then Boogie Ellis it was a good Boogie game. Boogie really came to play, scored, I think, 28 points. What are your impressions of the game next? And what are your overall thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you mentioned the Kobe factor here. He's just come so far, even from the first few games where he, you know, really just struggled. And, you know, you kind of wondered, like, could he play at this level? And then these last couple weeks here, like, he's been pretty clearly the best player on the team. I mean, his box plus minus is now over 10, which is, you know, it's really high. It's not like quite Evan Mobley level, but it's like, you know, it's close. And what I love about him is he doesn't force anything on offense. Like, he doesn't take bad shots. He takes open threes. He'll take, 10 footers in the lane. He cuts well without the ball. He is a very good passer, as well. So, like, he's really been one of our better offensive players too. And then, you know, you get to the defense with all the steals and deflections, up to 5th in the country in steal rate. And he's really been the star of the team. I think, you know, with Drew Peterson and Boogie Ellis, they're both really streaky players. Boogie was, you know, really bad the last couple games, had a really good game tonight. Peterson was really horrendous, I think, in that Auburn game. I mean, he didn't shoot well. I think there were several times where he just didn't care about rebounding, didn't even try to box, you know, anybody out. He made a few bad passes to when he was posting up. So he had a really terrible game. But I do think a lot of that is just we don't really have the guard play and he's being asked to do too much in certain times. So I don't think it's quite fair to say like he's gotten significantly worse as a player. I think his role changed. His shot quality has been a little bit lower just without having Isaiah Mobley as a post threat. You know, Reece Dixon Waters is still, you know, just too up and down. I think like he has good moments and flashes and he's just not quite back to where he was. Josh Morgan, I think played, he was okay. He was fine. He's kind of his typical self. I think he contested a lot of shots, even if he didn't get the block numbers. And what else? Trey White, I thought he made some really good hustle plays in the second half. He had a really bad first half, but kind of came on in the second half and is, you know, I think he's doing some Kobe Johnson stuff, right? Like he's playing hard, you know, pretty good on the glass, stole a few possessions on the offensive glass. That was really good to see. I think the team is starting to round into form a little bit. If you take out that stretch at the end of the first half, I mean, USC really dominated this game. And that Auburn team, like, you know, you could say, you know, oh, they just threw the ball away a ton. A lot of those were forced by Kobe. Not all of them. I think they were careless to an extent. You could say Wendell Green, you know, wasn't right or didn't play. But like Trey Donaldson kind of easily replicated his performance anyway with this strong game. He's a good player for them, I think. To build on in future years. And they were just bigger than us too. I mean, like Dylan Cardwell is a really good offensive rebounder on the inside. They bring off the bench. Johnny Broom, another really good guy on the offensive and defensive glass, and a really good shot blocker too. So he's a beast. He would start at, you know, almost any program in the country. So really, really good win. Felt like a necessary win. I don't think the team played like an A game, but I thought they really competed. They competed really hard. And, you know, they were the more poised team in that game. Like, and there were lots of times this season where our guys weren't the most poised team. So I was kind of welcome to see that too.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple quick thoughts. Surprise me. I do. Hooplins seems to be updating now on a daily basis, which is important to look at some of the on-court, off-court stuff. Not surprising, Boogie had a huge on-court versus off-court because when he went out in the first half, that was part of the time when Auburn made their run. But surprisingly, the top guy for the team was actually Joshua Morgan. We were, you know, basically plus 0.333 point per possession differential. So when he was in the game, I mean, that's a huge differential. And he was in there for 54 possessions, offense and defense. So he's in there for almost 80% of the game. So in those, when he's actually in the game, we were outscoring. I don't have to do quick math here, but, you know, we were outscoring Auburn in the range of 20 points when he was in the game. And then we were giving a lot of those points back when he wasn't. So, I mean, there were a couple times when Johnny Broom kind of got the better of him and Johnny Broom put up pretty good numbers. But and just like Morgan's overall kind of presence made a big difference, especially since I that was one game where I think Kajani really kind of struggled. Like at one point, I remember we had him in there in the zone at the back of the zone and like they did an entry pass to Broom at like the free throw line. And like Kajani was like totally out of position, almost like he didn't realize Broom was a left-handed player. And Broom was just very easily able to go to his left and score. There were a couple of like other times stuff like that kind of happened in the game where there was one time when the ball, there was like a, I think the ball went to Flanagan, I'm not sure, on like the right wing. And we had Reese out there, and I couldn't tell if we were in a zone or a man because it looks very similar the way we were playing. But Reese almost was acting like we were in a zone and was like just like kind of getting his hands straight up to defend the three. And like Flanagan drove right around him with his dominant hand, got to the paint. Morgan had to step up to guard him, and then that led to an easy dunk, a dish and dunk. I mean, in general, the defense was pretty darn good, but like there were a couple instances like that where, you know, if we can like kind of just like get like get those things under control. I mean, our defense could be really, really, really good. So yeah, I do have to give props to Morgan as well. Just looking at these numbers. Yeah, Drew, as far as like what it looked like on the court, like it did not look good. He only had one rebound. You know, he was positive on court, off court, but he was in the game almost the entire time. So that's not surprising. You're not getting a lot of data that way. You know, his shooting, you know, 2 for 10, he was some of those threes he was taking, like, I think offline Romer was like, it looked like he was shooting like, I can't remember who he compared him to, but just coming off pick, shooting threes, like fadeaway threes. I mean, that's not his game. He can definitely shoot a three from the wing coming off a pick, but not like fadeaways, like where he's shooting before he even gets the ball. Definitely not his game. But I have to say, like, I wasn't sure what to make of this Auburn game. I Auburn team, when we were down at halftime, I was for sure we were going to lose this game because I thought, look, we played a pretty decent first half and we're down. Like, what's going to happen in the second half? But we battled. We really battled and kind of kept things together. And we're, you know, kind of just found ways to get things done. I think the team could progress and get better. I will say, I think this Auburn team is actually going to get better as the season goes on. And I say that because I think Trey Donaldson is going to be a major factor for them. He only played 16 minutes against us, and we fouled him out was the thing. Like, he was like, when he went out of the game, that was a huge deal for them. A much bigger deal, I thought, than them losing Wendell Green. Like, Donaldson was like a real difference maker. It's interesting because, like, he's not, you know, the like the big flashy recruits in that class were Johan Traor and Chance Westry, who I think both got in the game, really didn't have much of an impact on the game. And then they had Johnny Broom transfer, who's a, you know, big player. But I, you know, Trey Donaldson is also a freshman. I think you pointed out to me, I didn't realize he was also a football recruit at safety. And he looks like it. I mean, he is a thick guy. So I think Auburn actually might be a little better. I thought they might be like the sixth best team in the SEC. I could definitely see them moving into like the fourth best range, fourth, fifth best range, depending on how the season breaks out. Just cause I think Broom is going to be a real, you know, he's going to be an anchor down there. And I do like the way Donaldson looked, and I don't know if they're going to get anything from Westry or Traor this season, but you know, the rest of their guys looked pretty tough, you know, Cardwell and even more to a couple of nice things, Jalen Williams. So I think Auburn is like a pretty decent team, especially defensively. I think this is a good win.
Yeah. And you know, they're not going to turn the ball over like 23 times in the SEC. I mean, that was just an anomaly, right? Like, they're going to, you know, if they have an extra, like, let's say they turn it over on average, like 12 to 15 a game, that's an extra like 10 to 13 possessions or so. Like, that was just a huge thing. And they were pretty careless. We sped them up well, but you can kind of like put them in the SEC hierarchy, right? Like, I don't think you would say they're on Arkansas's level or Alabama's level, and maybe not Tennessee's level, but kind of after that, like, I think this team could compete with Kentucky. I mean,
yeah, I mean, look, like, does Kentucky have a win against a power conference team yet? I guess they beat Michigan, right? That was it. But yeah, whenever I want, like, I actually thought Kentucky played UCLA. We'll get into this in a second, but I thought Kentucky played UCLA tougher than I thought they would. I really thought UCLA was just going to beat their brains in, and they did win by 10 points, but Kentucky has not impressed me at all this season. Losing to Gonzaga by 16. I mean, obviously Gonzaga played well against Alabama, but that really kind of shocked me. I'm not a huge, and whatever's going on with Shibway, I don't know if he's back fully healthy or not, but he is clearly not the best player in the country. I mean, no way.
No.
And that's obvious from watching him. And I don't even know, like, just watching him play the season and then watching Johnny Broom play one game, I'm not sure who I would take between those two right now. I mean, maybe over the course of the season, Shibway gets more healthy and that's an issue. But this is like an interesting little team we've got together. We'll see how things go. We're playing in out here. I'm going to the game on Wednesday against Colorado State. The game's in Phoenix. We played in this event last year. It's the Jerry Colangelo Classic. Last year we beat Georgia Tech. So we're not exactly getting marquee games out of these. But, you know, it's a good neutral site game. And then we head right into after Christmas, we take a Christmas break and then head into the conference play going up to the Washington schools, which will be very important games for this team. But yeah, you know, look, we're at a point in the season where we've now played, I think, six high major teams or high major equivalent. Obviously, Cal is like one of the worst in the country. They haven't won a game yet. But, you know, BYU just beat Utah. They beat Creighton earlier over the weekend or last weekend. Florida Gulf Coast has actually looked decent. And their only losses on the season are San Diego, Tennessee, and the Florida Atlantic, who's actually a pretty good-looking team. So, yep. You know, the losses don't look as bad. I mean, really the problem almost is the wins. The wins look bad. Like our biggest, yeah. When we're dropping in like these, our biggest drops in like these, like kind of KenPom, like the advanced analytic ratings, our biggest drops are like beating Mount St. Mary's, beating Oregon State, beating Fullerton State. I mean, we're dropping when we beat these teams. So now the loss to Florida Gulf Coast, but it's down in the 50s. Now we're at 71. I think if you go by Torvik, I think he has a 66 in his, if you use just the actual games played this season. You know, I think we might be heading up a little bit better than that. We might be getting into the, you know, potential of being a bubble team, depending on how things work out. And I don't, you know, I think Vince will come back this season. But I'm not like counting on him to be a huge difference maker right off the bat. So, you know, I think we're gonna have to work our way through the season. But you know, if we can beat Colorado State on Wednesday, then go to conference, we'll be 10-3 if we can do that. Go into conference play, if we can get to like, I don't know, 12-8 in conference play overall, that would put us at like 22-11. That would put us right around the bubble, I think.
I think that gets you in with our strength of schedule in the non-con, like with the Bahamas tournament.
Yeah.
I think that probably does it. Because it's a strong league this year.
Like, it is.
We can talk about that too.
And yeah, so let's broaden this up a bit. First, let's talk about the top of the league, because we had a really interesting little weekend here, because basically we had like a mini Pac-12 SEC challenge, which is really weird. I mean, this is not official at all, but on this week, and these were like legit games, right? UCLA, Kentucky, Arizona, Tennessee, USC, Auburn. No, Arizona and SC got to play home games, but the Pac-12, it was a sweep. We won all three of those games. Interesting, yep. Too, Gonzaga, which may join the Pac-12 in the future when we're no longer a member, they won at Alabama. So they won too. So it was a little bit of a tough weekend for SEC, because four of the top five, everyone but Arkansas is in action in big kind of like marquee games, and they lost four of the five. Arizona looked pretty tough at home. I think Tennessee actually played them really tough. Tennessee is a weird team. I mean, they just don't have any shooting unless Julian Phillips gets going. He did not get going, and Arizona won, but it was a closer game than I think it could have been if Tennessee didn't really hold it together, because they really struggled to score.
They missed a lot of uncontested threes in that game.
Exactly. Like, and that's the thing about that team. I mean, they missed a lot of uncontested threes against us as well, you know, and they're going to lose games in the SEC, because I mean, they might have the best defense in the country, which I think they probably do, but you've got to, like, you can't just miss like every uncontested shot. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. They do have some remarkable numbers here, like number one effective field goal percentage defense, number four turnover rate. I mean, that's really crazy. I mean, and they're holding opponents to 20% from three. So, I mean, whatever Rick Barnes does on defense, I mean, that is a really good defensive team. And Arizona is a really good offensive team. They're number one overall.
Can we talk about Zakai Ziegler a little bit?
Yeah.
Player he is.
Well, and why did he start the second half of that game?
I don't know. You'll have to ask Rick on that one. I mean, like this kid, like I know his shooting percentages are a little bit down this year, but just watching him last year, like with Chandler, like he was really good. He's this little 5'9 guard. He gets a ton of steals, and he can, you know, he was hitting his threes for the most part against Arizona. I think he was like 50% from deep, but yeah,
3 of 6.
You know, he can get downhill, but he's just so much more dynamic than these other guards they play. Like Tyreek Key is a straight, you know, wing shooter who's a little undersized and kind of an inconsistent shooter anyway. And then Vescovy, like, hasn't hit anything this year. But like, you know, without Zakai Ziegler in that game, that's probably like a 15-point win for Arizona.
Yeah, and for those of you who, I mean, he's easy to spot because he's always the smallest guy on the court. But Ziegler was key against us because in the second half, he kind of shut Boogie down after Boogie just went absolutely crazy in the first half of that game. And then Ziegler just like stayed on him. And even though Boogie has like a 6-inch height advantage on him, Ziegler really made life difficult for him. Didn't completely shut him down, but really made it much more difficult for him to score. So this is like so much of Tennessee's offense is kind of like structured around the idea that they're going to get wide open threes for like Vescovi, because he gets wide open threes like all the time because teams are cheating down and various reasons. And it is remarkable. So he's played 9 games this season. In those 9 games, he's attempted 79 three-point attempts, and he's made 22. So he's basically shooting 9 attempts from three every game and is shooting under 28%. I mean, that's just crazy for a team that's like whatever, you know, number top 5 in the country. They have a lot of guys that are just like, you know, kind of play really scrappy defense, make life difficult. But they don't really have that one go-to offensive player. And I guess, you know, Phillips has been kind of the leading scorer just by on the margins for most of the season, but he didn't really get a ton of scoring done against, you know, I think 2 points against Arizona. So yeah. And I mean, look, the difference between like Carissa and Ziegler in that game was just like night and day, right? I mean, Carissa's 2-for-9 from the field. And Ziegler is out there and he's whatever, 8-for-11 from the field for 21 points. I mean, just totally different quality there. Arizona, meanwhile, continues to have, I mean, that combo of Tabellus and Balo is just, you know, even a team as big as Tennessee really had problems with it. Plavsic, who I think he was at Arizona State for like a nanosecond, right? And never played. He got himself in foul trouble in that game. He's like the only guy on Tennessee's team who could really kind of like hold Balo kind of in check, but he got himself in foul trouble. And then, you know, they were trying to rely on like Adu, and he was just getting pushed around like crazy. They didn't really have an answer for Tabellus, who was 7-10 from inside the arc. So Arizona's offense is just really, really good. But like the problem is they don't guard great, and Tennessee couldn't have taken advantage of that. And that's like the Tennessee weakness. If Vescovi just hit threes, I mean, he's 1-for-7 from three. If he just hits 2 threes, they could win that game.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And that's Arizona's weakness, right? Like they don't guard.
Yep.
It's just what it is.
Yep. UCLA, Kentucky. I think you probably still have UCLA as the top team in the conference. I think I still have Arizona. They're really neck and neck. This game was a little like in this game with like 10 minutes to go, UCLA led by only 6 points. I think there was actually a point in the second half, on the first 10 minutes of the second half, where Kentucky got it really close. It was almost like 50-50 to win the game. And then UCLA pulled ahead. UCLA is so much better than this Kentucky team, especially since Shibuya is just not like a dominant player right now. So this is, I actually think, I know Kentucky had a really bad year a couple years ago, right? When did they have a losing record, I think, 2 years ago, like the COVID year? I'm trying to remember exactly.
Yeah, it was, I want to say it was Askew's freshman year, right? Where they were leaning on him for minutes. It
was, correct.
That team was bad.
Yeah, and that team was 9-16. This team is not as bad as that team. And clearly they're more like upperclassmen guys that can play. But man, I am not impressed. I'm not impressed with that team. And I don't know if it's just the fact that, you know, you don't kind of have like consistent scoring, or you don't have the right mix of players. Jacob Toppin has been a real disappointment. Whatever they're expecting from him, you know, Antonio Reeves has had, Reeves is the transfer from Illinois State. He's had some good numbers here and there. Against UCLA, you know, Kentucky just didn't have a lot of guys, you know, bringing stuff to the table. Livingston had 14 points, but You know, Reeves, I think, you know, he was held to 6 points. Kasson Wallace at 7 points. They don't have a they don't have the dominant freshman. They don't have kind of like really, really, really strong perimeter players. They're relying on Shibue, and Shibue seems like he's dinged up. Am I missing anything?
No, and I think it kind of comes back to, you know, Kentucky. They're really, really good when they get the freshmen that are top five in the class, and they're definitely not as good when they get the kids that are like 10 to 20 in the class, right? Like,
yeah.
And it's been that way for Calipari for years, right? Like those dominant teams, it's when he had, you know, Carl Towns, right? Or Anthony Davis or Michael Gilchrist, right? The, those kids. And, you know, they were known as all world at the time. And, you know, the years when he had like Archie Goodwin and Alex Poitras, right? That weren't as elite. They missed the tournaments. And, you know, he's kind of like piecing it together with transfers, but like, if you're Kentucky, like, why are you getting Jacob Toppin as a transfer, right? Like, this kid didn't do anything at Rhode Island.
But yeah, I guess you're thinking, because you're thinking because of his brother, he's going to turn into something. Yeah. Well, and just, you know, so they've stopped playing Damian Collins. And not that he's a great basketball player, but he's like kind of like a Kentucky type athlete, right? 6'9", can jump out of the gym.
For sure.
Now he's on the bench. He's not playing, right? So now you're not getting the Kentucky athleticism. They obviously, after last season, they let Keon Brooks go. I think that at the time, it's like, okay, that makes perfectly fine decision. But, you know, Keon Brooks has played really well for Washington this season. He'd probably be like the second best player, third best player from Kentucky if he was on the team.
Yeah.
That was a questionable decision. I think they're staring at a very difficult SEC scenario. You know, especially since we don't know how like Mississippi State might actually be pretty decent. Or like Missouri might be better than we think. So, and LSU might be better than we think. So I think they're going to struggle to finish top four in the SEC. I don't really see them there right now.
Yeah, I'd probably go like, you have that top group, right? Tennessee, Bama, Arkansas, and then probably like Auburn and Florida after that, and then maybe Kentucky after that, right? I know they're still top 10 in KenPom, but a lot of that is they started number one in KenPom, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not really buying them as a top 10 team.
Yeah, and if you look at like Torvik, who's just, when you look at just like the actual games played, rather you take out all the preseason bias, he's got Kentucky down at he still has them at 23, which I think is questionable, but that's certainly not where, you know, KenPom has them. UCLA, I'm not sure what more you could say, but they have, well, look, Jalen Clark is now like an A-list type player. Hawkes is, you know, has an argument for, you know, being like player of the year nationally. I don't think he's that player quite yet, but he's got an argument. Jalen Clark has been absolutely dynamic. Tiger Campbell is one of the top point guards. Bailey has actually played, you know, he's had some struggles here and there, but if you look at like, you know, before the last few games, he was scoring double digits every game. Then all of a sudden he's gone cold the last three games. I think he'll warm back up. Bona, kind of the same thing. But then David Singleton, I mean, that guy is, you know, as money from 3-point range as you're ever going to. I mean, he's up to the point where he's 28 for 54 on the season. I mean, that's just kind of crazy. They're a really good team. I'm not even sure if you want to beat them. Like, they've lost a couple games. It's really kind of like the length has bothered them at times. Hawkes has struggled from three. That's an issue. If he starts hitting his threes, then it's like they're going to be almost impossible to beat. But if they struggle from three, get some length in there, and you just got to like try to disorient Tiger Campbell. But that's a really good team.
Yeah, Clark's kind of the swing guy, right? He's really elevated his game. And if he hits threes, it's hard to see him not being a first-round draft pick. Like, even if he hits, like, 35% of his threes, just given his how dynamic of an athlete is and, you know, really on- and off-ball defender. Like, he's almost better off-ball than on-ball, kind of like Anthony Melton a little bit. So I think he's like if I'm an NBA team, that's the guy I'd want from UCLA. Like, I think Hawkes is a really good college player, but not like you know, he'll play in the NBA, but he's kind of more of a second round guy, I think. And, you know, I wouldn't touch Bailey and Bona, like Bona, just because the center position has been devalued and he hasn't really done anything on offense except dunk, right? And Bailey, I think you're just betting on. I don't know what his role is, right? Is he a primary creator? I mean, he's, I don't think he's as as talented as he needs to be. You know, when you look at these NBA lead guards, right? But then is he a wing? Not really, right? So I think that's kind of the struggle for him. But yeah, no, they're really good. Singleton's got to be one of the best Pac-12 shooters in the last, like, at least decade, right? I mean, his career percentages are insane.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a guy that's more money. I mean, if you leave him open, he's like 80% from three. Like, I can't even think of a guy. I'm trying to think of a guy who's just that money whenever you leave him open. And he's a slow release, right? He has this weird, it's like low and slow release. But yeah, wow. Very different player than how he was in high school. I remember watching him in high school thinking, you know, he was really scrappy on defense. That was before he had the knee injury. And, but then, gosh, with that release, he's really going to struggle in college. Little did I know, all he has to do is back up far enough that, you know, the slow release doesn't matter as much. You know, I'm looking like just the similarity in the numbers between Jalen Clark and Kobe Johnson is pretty funny. Like, on the season, they're both 10 for 26 from 3-point range. you know, Jalen Clark has a steal rate of 5.5, which is 12th nationally. Kobe's a 6, which is 5th nationally. They both block some shots, although Kobe's a little longer, so he blocks a little more. But, you know, Jalen Green's really up there on offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding rate. Kobe's not bad at both, but not quite at the Jalen Clark level. The big differentiator is that Jalen Clark is shooting a lot more from inside the arc. He has 83 attempts, is shooting close to 69% from two-point range. Kobe's shooting well from two-point range, like 61%, but he only has like half as many attempts as Jalen Clark. But they're just a lot of similarities and kind of what their kind of roles are for the team a little bit. Clark is just more active on the offensive end. Where actually, I think Kobe's almost more active on the defensive end. Like, especially now, it just seems like he just wanders the court trying to get steals constantly and is not too far out of position. Okay, let's a little more, I guess, just on some of the games that we saw over the weekend. Stanford loses to Texas. I don't know much. There's a ton to say about that game. But then and Baylor played a pretty tough game in Dallas against Washington State last night. Any thoughts on those two games?
Yeah, Washington State. Credit to Kyle Smith for rebuilding the program after Abagidi kind of inexplicably left to join the G League Ignite. Not really sure. I mean, like, I guess go get paid, dude. Like, congrats. That was a tough loss for them. They had this guy, Jade Mullins from St. Mary's, who couldn't really get on the court for St. Mary's last year. And this guy is just money from three. So with him, and then Justin Powell kind of looks more like his freshman year. Justin Powell, just really dead-eye shooter when left open. So that's going to be a challenging game, especially on the road.
Yes, and it's coming up. It's coming up soon. Stanford, meanwhile, I don't know how much there is to talk about. I mean, the game was basically around a 7 to 10 point game for most of like the second half of the game. You know, Texas just a better team, but like there were opportunities like for Stanford to like get back in the game and like kind of like tie it at moments, and they just never can really get anything going. Made some bad turnovers when it like mattered. 18 turnovers for the game for Stanford. You know, that's one thing I have to say. If you're going to play like a style like they do, you can't turn the ball over 18 times. You know, they're not playing that style where it's like you're up and down the court. And the regression from Harrison Ingram is really staggering. I mean, he actually played 18 minutes that game, scored 5 points. He's just had an awful time of it. Stanford's now 4-7. I think the thing is they scheduled it. And I mean, to their credit, they put forth like a, you know, it's a really tough schedule. They've already played Wisconsin, San Diego State. They played Mississippi on a neutral. They played Memphis on a neutral. They played Florida State on a neutral. They played Texas was that game in Dallas, or that was like a
Yes, that was it was like a one day deal where they had a bunch of Pac-12 like
Yeah,
teams
correct.
against like Southern teams,
Right,
right?
yeah, and that was
Yeah.
in Dallas. And, but then they've also lost their two Pac-12 games to UCLA and Arizona State. So now they're 4-7. I think they're the chances of them making the, I mean, for them to make the NCAA tournament at this point, they're going to have to win. I mean, they have Loyola Chicago on Thursday. I guess they might win that game. I don't know. I mean, they could easily lose it. They're probably going to have to not lose more than four or five more games during the regular season. I mean, I guess five because they had such a tough schedule. But I don't know if they can do that. I mean, they still have Arizona State, USC, UCLA away, Oregon away, Washington State away. I mean, is the season basically, is this like the season over for Stanford now?
Yeah, I think they're kind of tracking towards a 500 season, maybe. I just watch them and I just think, like, yeah, same Jared Haas team. Like, nothing's changed. Like, maybe a few of the players have changed, but just same exact thing as I've seen the last several years here.
Yeah. Now I will say, now that they had to go out and get a new football coach, I don't know if they're going to want to get a new football and basketball coach on the same season. So maybe that will spare Haas's job another year. I have no idea though. Other big games though, because there were some other big games over the weekend. I just want to hit really quickly. Gonzaga in a really kind of exciting game, beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Best win of the season for Gonzaga easily. Brandon Miller had a huge game for Alabama, but they just kind of couldn't
Yeah.
get it going overall. So that was a little bit of a surprising result. I think the rest of the results were kind of like what you'd expect. Indiana, who's overranked at number 14, lost to Kansas by 18. Doesn't surprise me at all.
Yep.
Houston took care of business against Virginia. Doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, Virginia's not as much better than they've been the last couple of years, but they're not as good as they were, clearly.
Yeah.
So, any thoughts on those games? Oh, I guess the other one to throw in was this game that went to overtime between North Carolina and Ohio State, where North Carolina hit a buzzer beater in regulation, send overtime, once in overtime.
Yeah, it was a brutal loss for Ohio State the way it went down. I didn't really have a dog in that fight, but it was a nice shot. But I think it was Pete Nance. Yeah, let's see.
It was Pete Nance.
Was Pete Nance? Yeah, okay. Houston, really good job on the road. Good bounce back. My hometown team, so good to see that, and then representing the city. They're tough. Like, I think Bama was a particularly good matchup for them, but I still think Houston's a top five team from what I've seen so far. They're really good. Yeah, Kansas, like you said, like, I'm not buying that Indiana team at all. So I don't really put too much stock into that monster win. Like, we saw Kansas against Tennessee, right? And wasn't totally pretty. So I think they're a good team, but like, I'm not sure they're great. And then UConn, like, they beat Butler by like 20 on the road. Like, they just continue to be kind of the clear number one to me with their performance. And that team is, I think, really scary, like, when they're clicking, because they really defend and they have a good bench and their starters, are very like interconnected too. I think they're the best team right now, at least that I've seen.
Yeah, Sanogo had just a killer game too. He's been terrific this season.
Let's see. Besides that, yeah, like, I think UCLA is really good. Gonzaga, I thought their offense just it kind of looked like last year's offense more so in that Bama game. Hickman stepped up, kind of played better than he has for most of the season. Smith was really good in spots too, and then Timmy kind of did his thing, right? And yeah, it was good to see them get that win over Bama. But yeah, Brandon Miller, just crazy, crazy talented. So Bama's going to be there, at the top of the SEC. I'm not really worried about them. Gosh, what else? Do you want to talk about Vince a little bit and like him coming back? Because it's, we've heard like end of December, right? Or
That's
Vince
what we've
back,
heard. Correct.
right?
Now, so if you look at the schedule, We play, like I said, we play Colorado State on Wednesday, and then I guess they send the kid, they fly everyone home for the holidays.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where that is for Vince, but then everyone's got to be back to play right before the new year up in the Washington schools. So I don't know if the plan is to try to get him back, like use the holiday and he's back on the 30th against Washington. I don't know. From what I have not heard that he's actually going like full quote unquote contact or whatever the equivalent is for basketball at practice. Have you heard that?
I have not. No.
So I don't know if he's quite ready to start, but even I think Roxy Bernstein mentioned in the on air in the game against Auburn that it's not like he's going to be back soon. That's, I think, what the coaches have told him. So I think there's definitely a plan to bring him back, you know, maybe to start the new year. So I don't know exactly when that's going to be. And, I'm curious exactly what his role will be right away. I'm sure he'll be spelling Joshua Morgan. I guess the question is, like, how many minutes will he be able to get? How long will it take him to get acclimated to the speed of the game in college to be able to make an impact? And then what do we do with Kajani? Can we slip Kajani into the four-man role, which I think he's going to have to eventually be, I think. And that would actually help us if, you know, when we finally do play like Arizona. there are not a ton of teams now that have a true four like Arizona does, but they do. That's my thoughts on that. Do you have any other thoughts?
Yeah, I actually think it's going to be a big, big add, maybe bigger than you think. And, you know, you going through the Hoopland's numbers for that Auburn game was really interesting too, right? Like you said, Josh Morgan was the top guy in the on-off in that Auburn game. So when, you know, you don't have Morgan on the floor, like that is when we struggled the most this year. So even just having Vince for like those 10 minutes, I think will be huge. Kajani has definitely struggled on the glass and is certainly not the prolific shot blocker that Morgan is. And I think, you know, we've been talking about shortening the rotation all year. And I think one of the reasons that we won that Auburn game is that, you know, like we didn't have this extended rotation where we played Niagu and Hornery, right? Like, let's say you played, you know, those guys a couple minutes in that first half.
Oh, that would have been disaster.
Like we probably lose the Auburn game, right? Yeah. Like straight up. So I think, like, you know, if you can get like 40 minutes combined out of the Vince Morgan duo, I just think that goes a long way in terms of shot blocking, rebounding, and just not having that drop off from, you know, the Morgan minutes to the bench minutes.
And actually, just to, you know, underscore your point, I just look number one overall on the team point for on court, off court differential per possession. Morgan leads the team easily. He's at 0.113. Second on the team is Drew, which is not surprising because the offense stagnates when he's off the court. But Morgan's been the number one player on the team for on court, off court. Yeah. So having a guy who can kind of replicate what he's doing at least 90% the way there, which, you know, really realistically Kajani's just not ready to do yet, that will make a big difference. Absolutely. So you're right. I think that's going to be it'll be big just because it's going to give us those extra minutes to the five. And I think from there, whatever Kajani can potentially give us at the four would be gravy. Because it's interesting, like if we would have played the entire season, right, where we had both Vince and Morgan. Now, maybe neither one of those guys would have developed quite the way that Joshua Morgan has so far this season. So we don't know about that because it's called the minutes Morgan's played. But if we had access to them both, you know, I think that's like a team, Arizona's a team where we could have played Kajani some minutes at the four, and he could have like matched up against like Jalen Williams or something like that. You know, he's a guy you could actually play him against. Now, if you're going to get against UCLA, do you want to match Kajani right up against Jaime Hawkins? No, you don't. But but there are going to be teams, you know, where we're going to, you know, the decision is like a decision to be made. Utah, for example, went big against Arizona, right? So if they were to, for example, play both Carlson and Kieta against us, you could have Kajani Wright guarding him. I don't know if you want Kajani Wright guarding Marco Anthony, but it's, you know, that's just, it's a decision we you make at the time. It's, and it gives you different options. And, you know, over time, Kajani Wright, if he could develop a little bit of an off, more of an offensive game, then you, it's like the way Isaiah Mobley made other teams make that decision. Right. Anyway,
and the other thing too is like, if you look at kind of our season, the way it's gone, like Josh Morgan only played, you know, 26 minutes against Tennessee. Right. And that Wisconsin game, that was a pretty close game. I mean, that was, I know we lost by five, but, you know, that was like pretty much a ton of lead changes heading into the last few minutes there. Right. Like, does USC win the Bahamas tournament? Like, if they have Vince, I think, like,
I don't know if you can just potentially say yes,
but like, it's a conversation, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Especially when you look at, yes, absolutely.
And then, then the whole narratives change on the season, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that is true. That's true. Although the funny thing is, if we won, let's say if we beat Tennessee by, you know, 1 point in regulation and then beat Kansas by 1 point or something, our KenPom would probably still be in the 50s. If every other result was the same.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So should we turn to
they beat the top 10 in the polls, right?
Right. Exactly. Should we turn
top 10 in the polls and 50s in the KenPom? Yeah.
Right. And by the way, there are some KenPom ratings that, like, I was going through them yesterday and I was like, it's kind of scratching my head for, like, I don't understand Kansas is number five, but whatever. You know, Purdue's down to number seven. They're undefeated. Like, okay. They, you know, they beat Gonzaga by 18. They beat Duke by, you know, 19. You'd think that they'd be better than seven if they're undefeated, but I guess not. And meanwhile, you know, you have like Alabama 12, like this, like these rankings, Virginia 11, Alabama 12, Arkansas 13, Duke 14, Baylor 15. Like, to me, Bama and Arkansas are just clearly better than those other teams, but I mean, not even, they shouldn't even be bracketed in the same way, but, you know, whatever. And you know, West Virginia number 17, that's an interesting one. Their best win is against UAB. Yeah, weird. It's just weird, kind of a weird year. Okay. Do you want to turn over? Let's go over to the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Okay, so the latest is that Dorian Singer from Arizona committed. So that means we have three players from Arizona transferring to USC. We're still waiting. I think that the sense is we might get Cobb from Oklahoma State. We missed out on Josiah Johnson from Coastal Carolina. where are you with where we're at, and what are your thoughts right now?
Yeah, so I think Singer is a good add. I don't think he's like a Jordan Addison level receiver that's kind of destined to go in the first round of next year's draft, but I think he does a lot of nice things. When you watch him on film, he doesn't really have like the breakaway speed or the, you know, size and physicality that like Drake London has, but he makes a lot of contested catches and has really good hands. So I think he, you know, can fit pretty well into that Brendan Rice role and maybe be like a better version of Brendan Rice. I've seen that on message boards and I agree with it. He's not quite as tall, but just in terms of the way they play the position. Christian Roland Wallace, the corner, I like him. I saw a stat. He was second best among Pac-12 corners in completion percentage against, only behind Mekhi Blackmon. So, and Mekhi Blackmon didn't have to go against USC, right? Because he's playing on USC. So that's a pretty impressive stat. I think he'll fit into that, like, basically just a Mekhi Blackmon replacement, right? And I think that's definitely a good get and worth a scholarship. Kion Bars. Yeah, I mean, his numbers were good, better last year when he wasn't facing double teams and wasn't schemed against, but you definitely need, you know, to add interior defensive linemen. So that seems like a good pickup. Jamil Muhammad, the linebacker, I know we touched on him before, but very good athlete, should improve the linebacking core. Just because they were just lacking speed and athleticism, I think, the linebackers. They were just slow this year. He will help that. And I think Mason Cobb, if they are able to get him, he's a really good player. The stats back it up. I think he had 20 more tackles for Oklahoma State than anybody did on USC. He had a ton for loss, too. So, that would be, I think, a really monster get. And you put him with Muhammad, you throw in like Tackett Curtis, and if he can give you a few minutes or a few snaps, I think that'd be worthwhile exploring as well. So I think the defense is rounding into form. They're looking pretty good at defensive back. They probably need to add a few more interior linemen in addition to Bars. And they've got that offensive lineman to Dylan Wade, who's from Tulsa down to Auburn and USC. So we'll see what happens there, but he would be a good, definitely a starter as an offensive guard. So, they seem to be doing a lot of things right in the portal here. Oh, the last guy too is that Braden Fisk from Western Michigan, who I think was first team All MAC, defensive lineman who's visited Notre Dame, Florida State, and SC. It's a little bit tougher of a recruitment because he's from the Midwest and Notre Dame's involved, but we'll see what happens there. But yeah, like I'm pretty happy with the way things are going in the portal. They seem to be adding guys that are contributors and definitely filling some needs here.
Yeah, so Fisk would be huge. I like the idea that so far the guys that we've actually got committed, Bars, Muhammad, Singer, they have all proven they're all trying to better their situation, right? They've all proven, and that goes for Roland Wallace as well. They've all proven themselves at kind of a step below type programs. They've proven themselves. They want to like say, "Hey, look, we want to play for the top programs." I really think that's the best way to go with these transfers. Not getting the former five-star all-world guy who went to pick your blue blood, and then like kind of washing out a little bit. I prefer the guys that have actually proved it on the field. I think we saw that with Gentry certainly before he got hurt. Now look, obviously if you can get, I mean, if you can get a Addison, I mean he was both, right? He was like, I proved it and I won awards. It's tough to get a guy at that level, but if you can get it, that's amazing. Singer's interesting recruit because like definitely not like a need, but like you add him to the mix, and it's like you really present an offense of like, hey, all these guys can really play. There's no real, there's no question about it. These guys can get open, then catch the ball. Is Singer gonna like, catch the ball and then run for 60 yards? Probably not, but that's okay. You don't need that. We don't need, I mean, we've got enough playmakers, and we've got Mario Williams, we have Taj Washington, and then we have the freshman coming in that can do crazy stuff. Singer's just like if that's the Brendan Rice role, but he can actually do it at a better higher level, I'm totally fine with that. I don't. Personally, I don't think like we need Marvin Harrison Jr. You can get him, great, amazing, but like it's okay. We're going to be fine without him. I think it'd be obviously really nice to get this Dylan Wade kid. Anything we can do on that score, but yeah, like I'm happy with Jamil Muhammad. It would have been interesting if we got Josiah Stewart as well, but I think that's like a. Almost like there's so many other guys we're looking at. If we just get the right, we just need to get the right guys. You don't need to get everyone. You just need to get the right ones. And I think the defense potentially has at least the excuses won't be there. Like, hey, look, we got the personnel in place. You teach, have them tackle. Don't confuse the hell out of them. Just get it done, and we'll have a just a basic defense that can get stops occasionally here and there. And the offense is going to score most of the time. So. That's what you need. And I think we're getting the players we need to do that.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. And totally agree with you on the like get a dude with proven production, right? Like you see it on the basketball side, right? Like look at the way Taj Eady played, like he had some proven production compared to like going to get Derek Thorne, right?
Yeah.
Who's the five star, out of high school. So it works on, in both sports, right? Like if you went to a blue blood and couldn't get on the fields, like maybe there are some situations, why you could get on the fields, but in terms of like Derek, right? Like Derek was starting at Duke, right? Like he had the opportunities with talent around him and it wasn't great. And then you get him and it's still not great. Whereas same with kind of like Shane Lee. Like Shane Lee started as a freshman at Bama, right? He has some injury issues, but wasn't that great. Got passed on the depth chart and they were fine letting him go, right? So it seems like Lincoln's learning that this cycle a little bit, because you see them going after Mason Cobb from Oklahoma State and passing on Justin Flo, right?
Yeah, that same concept. Absolutely. And a kind of an equivalent, analogous situation, look what's going on with Wyoming basketball. So Wyoming loses to Dayton on a neutral by 17 points. By the way, that's a game coming into the season. I think a lot of people would have said Wyoming is going to beat Dayton on the neutral. Now, Wyoming is playing the season basically without their best player so far. But Ethan played 5 minutes, took one shot and two turnovers. Jake Kyman got on the court for 2 minutes, missed a three, turned the ball over once. Max Agumpolo did not play. DNP coach's decision. So the big three transfers played a combined 7 minutes, 0 for 2, three turnovers, and they lose by 17 points. That's not a good result, and it's not the result I'm sure that Wyoming and Jeff Lidner were looking for going into the season, and they've had a rough go of it. And I think they did. They were kind of like, "Hey, we're relying on these transfers because they're from USC, UCLA, and they just have not been. They haven't been performing at the level that really even that like kind of like upper tier high mid major level. They haven't been performing at, and that's a bad sign."
Yeah, and I think like it kind of goes to show, right? Like you see fans kind of armchair quarterback coaches really in football and in basketball saying, "Oh, hey, look at this 4 or 5 star recruit. Like, why isn't he getting on the court or why isn't he getting on the field? The coach must be screwing something up because, this kid is super talented and he's playing player X over him, and player X is a 3 star, and player X isn't that great anyway," right? Most of these coaches know what they're doing. And the reality is like a lot of these kids are just overrated in high school, right? It is what it is. It's not a perfect scouting system. It's pretty rare that you see coaches at high major programs recruit like a really hot shot kid. And if it doesn't work out, he's probably just overrated. It just, it is what it is.
Yeah, very rarely. I mean, I guess Amani Bates has kind of had a bit of a reclamation this season. But yeah, it's normally the player. It's the player and doesn't really, maybe the situation matters a little bit, but it's really the player, and it's up to him.
And we've talked about it too, right? Like, has Andy lost a transfer where you were like, "Oh shit, like this guy was a big loss and did big things in his second school"?
No. And the only transfer I think he's lost that actually was like, a starter was Max. Wasn't like a, crazy. We weren't like panicking. I mean, I guess Eric Sonheimer from the LA Times is panicking. fake cries of panic as a Bruin honk, but it just doesn't, those transfers don't shock me. And and none of the guys, like Jordan Usher, it took him a couple years and he was like the second best player on a Georgia Tech team that was like the worst team in the ACC. He's maybe had the best results after transferring. I'm thinking like,
yeah,
some of the transfer situations have been really, really bad. So I know like Derek Thornton had an okay time at BC. Not great. Okay. But, certainly he was not missed. All right. Anything else before we get out of here?
Any initial thoughts on Colorado State just in that game?
You know, so I watched a little bit of the end of their game against St. Mary's where, so just a little background, Colorado State's had a rough time of it. They got obliterated by Colorado in Boulder. Now you can say, okay, it was a road game, but like the drive for, I mean, you know this, the drive from Fort Collins to Boulder is whatever, an hour and 20 minutes. And, you know, it's not like Boulder can be a tough place to play, but it's not like they had to get acclimated to the altitude. So that doesn't explain it. Before that, they lost to Northern Colorado. They lost early in the season to Charleston, to Penn State. So they're a team that came into playing St. Mary's, you know, at St. Mary's with 7 wins and one of them being against Peru State. And they won, and they actually won. I mean, it was only 2 points, but they were leading. It wasn't like some buzzer beater. They were ahead and they kind of just won the game. To their credit, and they look like, you know, they made some key defensive stops at the end that mattered. They play a faster tempo. It's funny, teams against them play like an incredibly slow tempo, which is weird. The other thing is they have one of the worst, this is maybe perhaps the optimum matchup for us because they have one of the worst offensive rebound rates in the country. I think 362nd out of 363 schools. How many are there?
Yep.
I mean, that is remarkably bad. But some of their other numbers are good. I mean, they shoot well. They shoot 37, nearly 38% from three. They shoot 57% from inside the arc. They're top 13 in effective field goal percentage. They don't turn the ball over much. That's funny, the offensive rebounding. So I guess, you know, it's a game where I think if we guard on their initial shot, which we usually do, we should be in good shape. It's you know, we usually get in trouble when we start allowing offensive rebounds. As far as like turnovers, they're basically kind of average. They're above average at forcing steals, but not that far. So, you know. Anyway, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, one other note with them is their best player is this guy, Isaiah Stevens, who was injured for most of the year. So he came back in the LMU game, and he did play in both the Northern Colorado and the Colorado games. And he was pretty good in those games.
Yeah,
he was. This guy's, he turned it over 5 times against Colorado, so that didn't help. But outside of that, like, you know, Peru State, obviously a terrible opponent, but he had 10 assists, no turnovers. Against St. Mary's, he had 5 assists, 1 turnover. And since coming back, point-wise, he's at 13, 20, 15, 24, 23. And he's shooting 57% from 3, 54% from 2. Just a really, really good offensive player. So 66% true shooting so far this year, 32% assist rate, 14% turnover rate. So he's money. They do, as a team, they're 13th in effective field goal percentage offense, and they're 12th in turnover percent on offense. They do a really good job taking care of the ball and making it when they shoot. So the St. Mary's game is really interesting, right? Like you mentioned their lack of offensive rebounding. So they gave up 15 offensive rebounds to St. Mary's and they got 2 offensive rebounds in that game. So, you know, St. Mary's just had all these extra shots, but they were so efficient. So CSU had, they were 19 of 29 from 2, so 66%. And, you know, St. Mary's is a pretty good defensive team. So that's a really good number. And they made 36% of their threes. So it's kind of shocking that they won that game on the road, but they were just, they just hit their shots. That being said, right, like if they don't hit like that, if they miss some shots against us, right, and I think we're a pretty good defensive team, you know, especially in effective field goal percentage defense. And we might not turn them over a ton, but I do like the matchup because it's not like they're throwing a bunch of athletes who can just get after it on the offensive glass and dominate that aspect of the game. So I'm feeling pretty good about it overall.
Yeah, I think, and you know, we'll, I'm sure, key in on Stevens, and we'll see. You know, you shut him down, I think it's tough for them to win games. I guess they did beat South Carolina earlier in the season.
Yeah, that's a bad South Carolina team, though. I don't know if you track them at all, but it's rough.
Right. Yeah, and just looking at like some of their, like the rebounding percentages for some of their guys are like they just do not offensive rebound. So yeah, look, play defense and rebound, and I think we win this game.
Yeah. Are you going to that one? Notice you're in neck of the woods.
I am going to that one. Yes. I will be there. Yep.
All right. Love to hear it.
Okay. All right. I think that is that. And I guess we'll take a little break for the holidays. Maybe be back next week after the Colorado State game and before we start with the Pac-12 play.
Yeah, absolutely. And wish everybody a safe and happy holiday season here.
Yep. And Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy Holidays. Yeah.